dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Gaffney. I am pleased to be your host for a tour of the battlespace of what I think of as the war for the free world, joined by our executive vice president at the Center for Security Policy, former member of Congress, and jolly good fellow, Fred Grandy. Welcome back, Fred. Let's recap the news of the week, shall we?
I was about to break into song.
Hold off. Not that he's not a pretty good singer, as it turns out, but we'll save that for another segment. Fred Grandy, give us a quick readout on specifically what has been happening with respect to the Muslim Brotherhood out of Egypt.
Well, clearly, it looks like the epicenter of the world of Sharia is Egypt, and particularly the Muslim Brotherhood, the delegation of which showed up to great acclaim in Washington. And here's what astonished me, Frank. Apparently, there are protocols, even for diplomatic missions, that come from countries with previously questionable behavior. All of those customs scrutinies were waived for the Muslim Brotherhood when they arrived here. So why they went above...
Do we know by whom?
By the White House, by Customs and ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And for some reason...
But presumably the direction to do that came from somewhere north of them in the food chain.
But here's what's so interesting about this. One of the people in their delegation was apparently a guy who had been a U.S. citizen or lived in Pennsylvania long enough to be brought up on child pornography charges, something that would normally be flagged if you're trying to get into the country. And he just walked right through and walked right past all of the supervising authorities. So it looks as though we're not just ready to do business with the Muslim Brotherhood. It looks like we're ready to essentially accommodate them just the way we have Saudi princes.
Indeed, yes. Well, as it happens, Fred Grandy, as you know, we are going to be rolling out a product here from the Center for Security Policy next week, which will shed light on much of what's been going on in this vein. We call it the course, and I'm anxious to talk more about it next week when we do the rollout. But for the moment, Fred, this is just of a piece with the kind of larger strategy of engaging the Muslim Brotherhood. Tell us about Hillary Clinton and the role that she's been playing as Secretary of State in this regard.
As much as they seem to be engaging the Muslim Brotherhood, they seem to be disengaging Congress, who has legitimate oversight authority and in some cases an ability to block funds flowing through foreign policy.
If they will.
If they will. But in this case, $147 million that has been essentially held by the chair of the Foreign Relations, the Foreign Affairs Committee in the House, Ileana Ross Leighton of Florida, has ceremoniously been unblocked by Secretary Clinton, who said, we're going to give it to the West Bank and Gaza no matter what.
Wow.
Now, that is a direct contravention of lawmaker objections, not completely dissimilar to the $1.5 billion that they're sending to the Egyptian military now against the objections
in,
of Congress.
As Frank Wolf pointed out on our show last week, in a lump sum, strings attached, no conditionality. And Fred, I guess what's so striking about this is the last time I checked, there were actually restrictions in law on funding of Hamas, which is now part of a unity government in the Gaza Strip and presumably in the West Bank with the Palestinian Authority. How are they finessing that?
Well, apparently, if you send it to the Palestinian Authority and it goes to the West Bank and Gaza, the presumption from the Secretary of State, who I thought would know better, is that none of this will go to Hamas because we know they're troublemakers.
You can't tell me they're saying that with a straight face.
No, they're not. And that's why none of this, I think, we can talk about with a straight face because they're winking and nodding at the entire legislative branch of the United States government said, we're going to conduct policy any damn way we please with your money.
Right. And approve our recess appointments when you're not at recess and on and on. Fred Grandy's our guest, and as you all know, I think he has been working in these vineyards for quite some time, including on Capitol Hill, where he was, among other things, on the House Ways and Means Committee. So he knows a bit too about congressional prerogatives. One of the restrictions, as I recall, Fred, that the Congress imposed on the aid, $1.5 billion of it, as you say, that Hillary Clinton has now approved for Egypt, was that there had to be a certification that, in fact, it's moving in the direction of you know, a democracy. And yet the parliament has just, in the past day or so, acted in a way that makes it pretty clear it's democracy for some, but not for all.
Well, the people that it's no longer democracy for are those remaining authorities and members of the Mubarak government who have been told, apparently with force of law, that for 10 years you may not occupy any kind of government position whatsoever. And also their new president, Khaled al-Shatter, is now on record. And by the way, this kind of goes right to what you were talking about earlier about the course. We have this guy on tape, Frank, at a major speech in Alexandria saying, we are here to further Sharia. This is our purpose on the planet. If that doesn't sound like Yusuf Qaradawi and the other Sharia big shots that we talk about a lot, then I missed something in the translation.
Right. And if it is a democracy, it comes as close to being one man, one vote, one time,
absolutely,
as they say, as ever. Again, we're joined by Fred Grandy for our weekend wrap-up. Let me just ask you this, Fred. You were at a program yesterday at the Heritage Foundation, featuring, I'm very pleased to say, one of the center's fellows, senior fellow Kevin Freeman, the author of a terrific new book called Secret Weapon.
Right.
Give us a sense of both what Kevin said and what kind of response it evoked from the audience as he described one of the most important aspects of this war for the free world, arguably of all.
Well, Secret Weapon is about the major assault and attack on the United States in the last 10 years. And if you believe what Kevin Freeman tells you, that's not necessarily 9/11. It's the 2008 financial crisis, which we are beginning to learn largely
and which, by the way, if I may interrupt, started, folks, are you paying attention? On September 11th, 2008.
Absolutely, and that is not a coincidence.
Not a coincidence.
However, if you're looking to blame just the usual suspects, the Islamists, Kevin Freeman goes on to say, no, you got to include China in this, because apparently they have been engaged in economic warfare for some time, knowing they probably couldn't take us down in a military fight. But by leveraging their assets, their U.S. debt, by making runs on markets, by short selling, and
naked short selling,
which of course is counterfeiting.
Right.
They are succeeding doing to financial markets, which bin Laden tried to do to the World Trade Center. By the way, also not just a random target, but a statement. And economic jihad is beginning to materialize, largely through the efforts of Kevin Freeman, as being one of the major tools our enemies will use to compromise our national security. Mm-hmm. The takeaway, though, Frank, is that there are almost there are no federal agencies or branches of government that are giving this the attention it deserves.
Right. No, and I think what Kevin actually documents, both in the book and in and the ones he made yesterday at the Heritage Foundation, Fred Grandy, are that it's a case of willful blindness.
Absolutely.
On the part of those who you'd think would have the responsibility to be monitoring these things, including an undersecretary of defense by the name of Michael Vickers, who, I'm sorry to say, seems to have been seriously part of the problem here in not only looking the other way on some of these real financial threats to this country, but to suppressing the kind of analysis that Kevin Freeman's done, the forensic analysis that exposes what they've been.
But if this is the guy, and I assume Michael Vickers is the guy who told Kevin Freeman, well, this kind of stuff is not in our swim lanes.
Yeah.
And then you go back to Treasury, and you know from your own experience, Treasury in a couple of administrations has said, well, Sharia, compliant finance, these kinds of things, that's really not as bad as you say it is.
Or actually, we like it. We're going to buy the largest purveyor of Sharia insurance products in the world.
Which we did with TARP money. But the point is, where can you go to get at least some oversight on this? Congress, if there are financial committees working on this, I haven't seen much of that. And there doesn't seem to be any kind of federal oversight at the executive level to do this. So hopefully, at some point, somebody besides you and me and the Heritage Foundation will pay attention to Kevin Freeman.
Well, I'm hoping so, too. I think the book is doing very well, which is encouraging. And the fact is, especially as Kevin lays out this story of what's been happening and what its implications are, and then connects the dots still further by pointing out that there's a third wave to this attack, the first being sort of raising oil prices before this attack of 2008, the attack itself of 2008 being the second, and then the third being one that he believes is underway right now, which is to destroy the U.S. currency as the reserve currency of the world, the U.S. dollar. So all of these cry out, as you say, Fred Grandy, for oversight by the Congress, attention by the executive branch, and a demand for both on the part of the American people. And I'm hoping that Kevin's important work and our small contribution to it will encourage that.
The irony, of course, is that we spend how much time and effort prosecuting and incarcerating Bernie Madoff, one bad guy, and we're completely looking the other way at complete countries and coalitions of countries, Russia and China, most specifically, who are looking to undermine our currency and use our debt against us.
Well, and there is evidence, according to Henry Paulson, the former Treasury Secretary, that they were actively conspiring on that score even before this attack. Craig Randy, we have to leave it at that. Thank you for a quick tour of important areas of the battlespace of the free world and for the great work you do at the Center for Security Policy. Keep it up.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any other junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
We could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
The Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by an old colleague and friend of many years, Ambassador Hank Cooper. He is currently the chairman of the board of High Frontier, an organization that was founded by one of the great military leaders of our country, General Danny Graham, quite a number of years ago, to promote the idea of missile defense and ensuring that we do not compromise the high frontier. Ambassador Cooper knows a lot about these subjects as a result of having served his country in a number of different capacities, including most recently as the director of the Strategic Defense Initiative Organization under George Herbert Walker Bush. Prior to that, served President Reagan as an arms control negotiator, was a senior official in the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. In other words, a man who knows a lot about the subject at hand, which is the threat posed to our country as well as others by North Korea. And Hank, as we're speaking, the missile that the North Koreans are said to be prepared to launch has not yet been fired. And we don't know at the moment what consequences there might be if it has been fired. But I'd like to ask you a little bit about the threat as you see it, both in the form of this missile most immediately and
More generally, what North Korea in its own right and as a partner in crime with Iran and Syria and others represents to this country. And then we'll talk a little bit about what we could be doing about this.
Well, I think the real issue here is that they're so, on the one hand, they're unpredictable in precisely what they're going to do, but they're quite predictable in the way they deal with the United States on these issues. And we seem not to learn from past experience when we, you know, threaten and actually impose sanctions and so on, and they run this gamut of threatening us with ballistic missiles. This isn't the first time we've gone through this drill. A number of years ago, they launched a series of ballistic missiles all at one time, not of an ICBM range, but just to get our attention. And they have, of course, failed at what they're trying to do this time, which is to put a satellite in orbit. And if they do that, they will have an ICBM capability, which could reach the United States with a weapon of mass destruction. They also are allied with Iran and have passed technology to Iran, and I suspect will have observers from Iran on this test when they conduct it. And they will learn from what the North Koreans do. They, the Iranians, will learn from what the North Koreans do, and they'll also learn from our response just whether or not we're a paper tiger and dealing with threats of this sort, or whether we're going to be serious and responding to Iran when they approach this capability as well.
Yeah. Ambassador Cooper, you know a lot about missiles, obviously. What is the nature of this particular launch vehicle, in your judgment? The North Korean line, of course, is that they're just using it to put a satellite into space. And yet the rest of us have understood it to be basically the same vehicle as they would be using to launch nuclear weapons in our direction, perhaps. Is it, in fact, anything other than a missile test and therefore a violation of commitments they've made to us and international resolutions of the United Nations?
I think it's a distinction without a difference. I remind people at the very outset of the missile era, the Soviet Union first launched a satellite and then they launched ICBMs. They used exactly the same rockets to do both. So, you know, this is not a technological distinction that's being made. It's only, I think, for propaganda purposes that they are focusing on, you know, this particular launch on putting a satellite in orbit. If you can put a vehicle, and I don't know what the weight will be, but of that size in orbit, you can also bring it down from orbit anywhere on Earth.
You call to mind, of course, the Sputnik moment when suddenly the Russians were in the ICBM business, the intercontinental range ballistic missile business. And it was, in fact, as you say, Ambassador Henry Cooper, the fact that that was a ballistic missile and very quickly translated into a new threat to us that I think was of such concern, not simply that the Russians had beaten us into the symbolic business of orbiting a beeping satellite in space. Ambassador Cooper, again, by the time this airs, we may have seen this particular scenario play out. But what capabilities does the United States have now in place to prevent such a missile from North Korea from reaching our shores or those, for that matter, of our allies, if it were to be headed that way?
Well, we have a number of interceptors in Alaska which have the capability of intercepting an ICBM, an intercontinental ballistic missile that comes at us over the pole and toward that part of our nation, the northwestern part in particular. And we also have Aegis ships at sea. We have some 22 cruisers and destroyers at sea today with ballistic missile defenses on board. We have tested the Aegis system against an intermediate range ballistic missile, which would have gone about 3,700 kilometers in range, which is among the longest missiles that we've actually tested against. So we have ships at sea today with an anti-ICBM capability inherently, provided they get advanced queuing from radar that's closer to the launch site.
And would it be the case, Ambassador Cooper, with your deep knowledge of our missile defense capabilities and their limitations, would it be the case today that those sensors that we need to ensure these interceptors would have the cueing, the guidance, and so on that they need, are those in place? Can you tell?
Well, in some cases they are, and in some cases they aren't. When you think about Iran and missiles coming over the pole toward the eastern part of the United States, we don't have radar up in the northeast, which would enable the ships that are based, for example, in Norfolk to provide such an intercept. It wouldn't take very much to put a radar at Hanscom Field up near Boston that would enable them. Those same ships are deployed in the Sea of Japan by the United States and by Japanese, and they have the capability of protecting Japan and our allies in the Far East as they stand against the shorter and medium range.
Yeah, and the Japanese have indicated, as I understand it, that they will shoot down this missile if it's headed their way. Ambassador Cooper, let me conclude with a, sort of a quick overview, as you see it, of the Obama administration's stewardship with respect to missile defenses, both the programs, some of which they inherited from the Bush administration, and with respect to the policy, particularly the idea of arms control limitations being reimposed on these missile defense capabilities. Can you give us a minute and a half or so on that?
Yeah, I'm very concerned about the president's comments a few weeks ago to Medvedev, the then president of Russia, basically saying him to hold off on the missile defense issues until after the election, in which he presumed he would be reelected because he'd have more flexibility then. I'm very concerned about that because we've gone through a litany of executive agreements in time past that have ended up limiting our missile defenses. So you don't even have to go to the extent of a treaty to get to the point where we limit the capabilities of the systems that we deploy.
A very worrying prospect, I must say, and as you've indicated, Ambassador Henry Cooper of High Frontier, when you combine it with programmatic actions the Obama administration is taking to slow down missile defenses, to simply cancel some or shelve others, it really creates an image of a lack of will to protect the American people against the sorts of threats that may be imminent in the form of a North Korean launch or certainly are not in the far too distant future. Ambassador Cooper, thank you so much for joining us and for the work you do at High Frontier and have done throughout your long and illustrious career in the United States government. Keep up the good work. We'll look forward to visiting with you again soon, perhaps in the aftermath of this particular episode. Next up, we'll be speaking with Dr. Zudi Jasser about what is going on in his world, the attacks on him by the Muslim Brotherhood.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fastballing philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by a man that I've had the privilege of knowing for some time and admiring more and more with each passing year. His name is Dr. Zudi Jasser. He is really the archetypal American Muslim that we all want to have be part of the fabric of our society and part of the counterweight to the Muslims that we hear so much from so much of the time, who profess to be the leaders of their community and yet seem to be, leading it astray, often in league with, or in some cases actually associated with, the Muslim Brotherhood. We want to explore all this with Dr. Jasser. He has founded a wonderful organization called the American Islamic Forum for Democracy and an umbrella group of like-minded anti-Islamist Muslims called the American Islamic Leadership Coalition. Zudi Jasser, welcome back. It's great to have you with us, and very keen to talk first and foremost about something that's going on involving you very directly at the hands of these Islamists. You've been appointed to a Blue Ribbon Commission. Tell us about it, and tell us what kind of campaign is now being waged against you by these guys, and why.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Frank. As always, it's great to be with you. Yeah, this campaign has been very revealing,
It's basically, I was appointed to the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, commission that Congressman Frank Wolf founded through legislation in 98 to be a watchdog over the State Department, the White House, and Congress to let Congress know especially what can be done to improve the rights of religious minorities across the world in foreign countries. So interesting, this commission has no domestic mandate, it's a foreign mandate. But yet, when I was appointed, I'm not the first Muslim to that commission. There's another Muslim on that commission, and actually one of the Brotherhood groups, Salam Mariati's wife, was on the commission back in 1999 to 2001. So there have been others that have had their chance. And interestingly, I was appointed by Senator McConnell. It was put in the congressional record. I've already been to one of the commission meetings, so I'm serving in that capacity. But the Islamist groups have basically gone into orbit with apoplexy about my appointment and have started an online petition and basically been spreading smears and basic lies about things that I've said or not said and actions that we've done. And none of the things that they're spreading, and if you read the petition, it doesn't quote from any of my work directly. MPAC put out an email saying that an Islamophobe was appointed to the commission. They have said that I'm against Muslims and against civil rights of Muslims domestically, and nowhere do they really point to what they have to do with any of the mission of the commission itself. And yet, interestingly, I think it speaks to their method, their dishonesty, and the fact that they're really threatened by the fact that finally there's going to be other Muslim voices out there, and this gives me and many of the Muslims that work with me a credibility that finally says that there's other Muslims out there that have seats at the table, that they don't monopolize as Muslim Brotherhood legacy groups the representation of Muslims in America.
Yeah. Zudi, I think people listening to this program have spent a fair amount of time getting exposed to the kinds of issues that you've just touched upon, but maybe it would be useful to just very quickly describe the differences between yourself and these Brotherhood legacy groups, as you call them, like the Muslim Public Affairs Council, MPAC, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, CARE, the Islamic Society of North America, ISNA, and so on.
The very essence of the difference is that our group believes in that government should separate mosque and state, that government should be based in reason, and especially a constitution with an establishment group, establishment clause. They believe that ultimately their fuel is based on the Islamic State concept, that the Ummah or the Muslim community should not only be based on a faith community, but being a state or a nation state. When they're minority, they try to deflect issues as being civil rights issues and deflecting disagreements. When they're a majority, like in Egypt or Tunisia, we see that they use political parties as Islamic parties in order to institute Sharia as being the law of the land, and thus other rights, other faiths have lesser rights, and moderate Muslims that don't want Sharia to be the law of the land, but rather based in pluralistic type legal systems, then get marginalized and become second class citizens.
Very well said. You have been subjected to these campaigns in the past. I remember vividly the incredible smearing that you were subjected to when Congressman Pete King invited you to testify before his committee on radicalization within the Muslim community. You've got this recent episode with the New York Police Commissioner Ray Kelly over a film in which you were very prominently featured, The Third Jihad, a wonderful film, by the way, which people can get online and check out for themselves. Again, this narrative that you're a bad Muslim or a non-Muslim, that you're an Islamophobe, I mean, it's unbelievable. You are a devout Muslim who is simply not practicing your faith, as many American Muslims do, and certainly Muslims around the world, in a manner that's consistent with this political doctrine. But go back to something you said a moment ago, Dr. Zudi Jasser of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy. You clearly pose a threat to this narrative of the Muslim Brotherhood that they represent Muslims in this country. Why exactly is that? And how can we help you pose that threat?
Well, I think ultimately the reason we pose a threat is in the United States and the West, you know, we look at minority faith groups and we put them into a pigeonhole and say, okay, what do Muslims think? What do this minority and what do they think? As if we all think alike. If this was in Egypt, we realized in Tunisia and elsewhere, the Muslim Brotherhood, even though they're looking to take domination there also, they are barely doing it with 50-60% of the parliament. There's 40-45% that don't agree with them. And clearly, when you look at that paradigm, they're half the population of Muslims want nothing to do with the Brotherhood. But yet that paradigm here in America, most Americans are missing because they put us all into one box and ultimately what they're realizing is their quiver here, that what the arrows in their quiver have always been is when there's disagreement, this person's against Islam, against Muslims, and all of a sudden now they have somebody who is a devout, observant, even Orthodox Muslim in my own home, and now they're realizing that it's exposing that they are basically inherently liars. They're dishonest. They will say we're not Muslim, and that old quiver they're using is finally backfiring on them because they're not doing this against a non-Muslim. They're doing it against a Muslim, and Americans are starting to realize, now, wait a minute, just because he disagrees with you on Islamic law, on the Islamic state, etc., that you need to address the issues and not label him and smear him with personal attacks. And I think finally they've shot one too many times. And, you know, because Senator McConnell and others are so, you know, forthright in their defense of me, Frank Wolf sent a letter to the largest mosque in Northern Virginia 2 days ago basically saying, knock it off with a personal tax if you feel, you know, and this was from a mosque in his district. If you have disagreement with Dr. Jasser, I highly recommend you point those out. But it is really unbecoming to attack a patriotic Muslim who really has nothing from which your community should be embarrassed about.
Good. Well, good on Frank Wolf. And I suspect that's the Dar al-Hijra Mosque or the
Adam Center
Mosque,
yes, yes.
Two, as you know, of the worst of the worst. Zudi Jasser, you've got a new book coming out in June entitled A Battle for the Soul of Islam, an American Muslim Patriot's Fight to Save His Faith. How do you, looking at the struggle going on within your faith, regard what the Obama administration is doing and frankly, the Bush administration did before it to embrace the Muslim Brotherhood at a moment that this struggle is going on? And if anybody should be embraced, I would think it's patriotic, law-abiding, tolerant, you know, pro-American, pro-Constitution Muslims like yourself, not people who have as their mission destroying us from within by our own hands.
Well, you know, that's why I wrote the book over a number of years, and it chronicles the first parts about my own personal history growing up in Wisconsin and my family building a number of mosques, one a small one in Wisconsin and another one here in Arizona that we helped with, and the reason why I went into the Navy and the history of my family in Syria and their oppression and came to the U.S. And ultimately, that story feeds into why I was so empowered to take on the Islamist groups and power structures of these Muslim Brotherhood legacy groups at its state. And that ultimately, my pushback against them is not only for American security, but because I'm fearful about the Islam that my children may learn. And I want that to be an Islam that's compatible with America and not in conflict with it. And I think ultimately, so many of our administrations, both Bush and Obama, have used sort of the lowest hanging fruit concept, which is, you know, well, if they have an address in Washington and they are, you know, you can Google them as Islamics and they must be the ones we need to talk to. When in fact, the vast majority of American Muslims, per the Gallup poll, 90% don't affiliate with any of these organizations. So that leaves them sort of embedded into the matrix of America's political system, Rotary clubs, civics clubs, etc. And it's going to take us some effort and support in order to create organizations that can counterbalance the Islamist movements in the West. And my book is about that. And it even ends talking about the challenges with the hearings, the challenges against Congressman Ellison and what he's done in Congress, and how the Obama administration actually snuffed out an appointment I had a year ago to a different commission, and this one they couldn't do because it was simply from Senator McConnell.
Yeah. Well, Zudi Jasser, we look forward to further visits with you and to the important work you're going to do on the commission, I know, and elsewhere through the American Islamic Leadership Coalition, among other organizations. God bless you, sir, and keep up the good work, and we'll talk with you again very soon. Next up, John Bolton joins us.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy. Eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for our wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta system, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta system to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners. And one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined once again by a colleague and friend of many years, Ambassador John Bolton, most recently the U.S. representative to the United Nations. But that capped a long and, I suspect, still continuing record of public service in numerous capacities in several different departments of the government. And, of course, a very public service role that he's playing at the moment as a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and a, well, almost chronic contributor to FoxNews.com, thank God, as well as other publications. Mr. Ambassador, welcome. It's important to visit with you because there are a couple of things that are really right in as they say, your wheelhouse at the moment. Let's start with North Korea. We had the failed test of this missile last night, early this morning, I guess it was, and that seems to suggest, obviously, that the technology isn't perfect in North Korea at the moment. But what does it say to you about the regime there, and what, more to the point, should we be doing about it?
Well, I think we should be delighted the missile has failed, but it certainly shows that the regime in Pyongyang had no fear whatever of consequences for even attempting the launch. And from the perspective of American security and that of our friends and allies, you know, it's hardly a defense policy to hope that your opponent's missiles fail.
Yeah.
The South Korean press has been filled with speculation that in addition to the missile test, there might be an underground nuclear test, North mm-hmm. Korea's third, coming in the near future.
Right.
And I think that just demonstrates this regime is the most sanctioned regime on Earth, continues to make steps toward a deliverable nuclear weapons capability, while the Obama administration, still trying to negotiate with it, still proposing that the U.S. sign up to the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, all the while North Korea is out there testing and making progress.
Well, I want to come back to the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty in a moment, but just staying with North Korea, Ambassador John Bolton, we've seen the administration pulling back on the 250,000 tons of food aid that they promised in exchange for no further missile tests out of North Korea. Obviously, they had to do that under the circumstances, but is it your bet that you'll see them get back at it as soon as people, you know, stop paying attention and pushing forward towards an effort to get these guys once again into the six-party talks? And is there any possible prospect that those things will produce anything other than more of the propping up of this regime that we've seen it involved in the past?
I think it's a virtual certainty the administration will try and get the negotiations going again. You know, there'll be a little wrist slap in the Security Council today since Russia and China is still flying political cover for North Korea. And despite the embarrassment, the humiliation of having cut a deal with North Korea in exchange for the food aid you mentioned and having the deal repudiated by North Korea in what may be a world record 2 weeks, the administration doesn't know what else to do. This is in their DNA, and that do it with North Korea just as just this weekend. Talks begin in Turkey with Iran in the umpteenth effort by the administration to try and get the Iranians to negotiate their nuclear program away. Neither one is going to happen. Neither of these countries are going to be talked out of their nuclear weapons program, and you just wonder when people will learn from history that is repeated over and over again.
Yeah, and I guess what we're seeing, too, Ambassador John Bolton, and God knows you've been in this business a very long time, I'm sure you would find it as depressing as I do that this notion that repeating behavior that has failed in the past is somehow going to produce better results. Einstein called that the definition of insanity. But this idea that sanctions, if we maintain them or even intensify them, is going to substitute for more concrete action, if you're really serious about keeping one or both of these regimes from threatening us or our friends and allies, for that matter, do you anticipate that there's going to be some finality to this exercise in Turkey this weekend, if it turns out, as we have every reason to believe, the Iranians aren't willing to give up their nuclear program this time any more than they have in the past?
Well, I think from the Iranian point of view, the smart way to handle these talks is to float some concessions that don't mean anything, to talk about the importance of a comprehensive solution to the threat of nuclear weapons in the Middle East, meaning Israel, not Iran, from their perspective, and generally to do whatever they can to drag the talks out and to buy more time, given how close Iran is to achieving nuclear weapons. And because of the political cover this would provide against the potential for an Israeli strike, this is just candy to the ears of Hillary Clinton and the Europeans that we're in negotiation. Heaven forbid you do anything that might jeopardize that diplomatic process.
Right.
Now, you know, Iran may come in and take a hard line. Who knows? But I think the real issue here is not what the diplomats are chatting about in Turkey, but what decision Israel is going to make on that Iranian nuclear program that's getting increasingly close to the finish line.
Yes, indeed, if not poised to cross it. Ambassador John Bolton, there's so much more to talk about. Let me just try to sort of use the remaining couple of minutes we have with you to give you a chance to sort of put this in context. We're listening to you and others describing obvious and growing threats from what are, I think, authentically and correctly described as rogue states, to say nothing of the people that are enabling them and providing, as you say, top cover for them, the Russians, the Chinese, and others, the other irritants, the Venezuelans and their ilk. Hardly seems to be a prime opportunity for the United States to be massively disarming, including but not limited to the president's apparent interest in a reduction of 80% of our own nuclear arsenal. Just give us a sense of your historical perspective and your sense of this from an applied politics point of view.
Look, this is demonstration as clear as you can get of the ideology driving the president. Mm-hmm. His budget cuts, his reductions in our capabilities from the nuclear level all the way down show
the,
that
the comprehensive test ban and the like, the law of the sea treaty.
Yeah. I mean, there's a long list, unfortunately, that he's very comfortable with American decline and not at all concerned about challenges to American interests around the world. This, to me, is why this conversation picked up on tape with Russian President Medvedev is so important. The president saying on missile defense, which I think should be a key issue in the campaign.
Especially after what could have happened yesterday.
Precisely. The president saying, just give me a little bit of space here until after the election, then I can be a lot more flexible. I really fear when this president no longer has the voters to challenge him, it's going to be Katie bar the door on our national security and a very dangerous time for the U.S. ahead.
Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us. As always, it's a privilege to talk with you about these issues and to get the clarity that you bring to them relentlessly, I'm happy to say, not just here, but elsewhere as well, and do it with the authority that comes of having served at senior levels of the United States government. And by the way, folks, I very much hope that we'll be seeing more of John Bolton at senior levels in the years ahead. He has been designated by Newt Gingrich, one of our Republican presidential candidates still in the race, as his candidate for Secretary of State. And interestingly enough, John Bolton is actually working for Mitt Romney. And I would very much hope that he would be on a short list, should Mitt Romney be elected, of candidates for the Secretary of State role or perhaps some other very senior position where he can help effect the kinds of course corrections in our country's national security policy that are so urgently needed when you look at just about everything that this president and this Secretary of State have been doing, whether it's with respect to some of the things we've just been talking about, the rogue states or the countries that are enabling them, or the Muslim Brotherhood and the Islamists of other stripes that are now being catered to and appeased by this government. It's hard to think of a place in which John Bolton and the kind of vision that he brings to the job wouldn't make a just terrific and much needed change. So let's hope for seeing more of John Bolton, and we will also be hearing more, I'm sure, from him on this program in the days ahead. Next up, we'll be talking with a man who has been following very closely one of the issues that we talked about with John Bolton and that requires an urgent course correction. His name is Tom Schieber. He's one of the country's leading experts on nuclear deterrence, what it's going to take for us to have it in the future, and the serious threats to our deterrent that arise from the policies of the Barack Obama administration, not least of which is its effort to rid the world of nuclear weapons, but in fact, just rid it of ours. Straight ahead.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.